Okay. Okay, here we go. Parsha Shmini, Tav Shin Ayin, Perek Yud Aleph. We're starting with Pasuk 41 through the end of the chapter. These psukim deal with the Isser, the prohibition on eating insects and creepy crawly things and worms and bugs and snails and etc. Okay? We're going to speak about this Isser, and we're going to get into some philosophical fundamentals that are borne out through the way the Isser is presented to us, the way this prohibition is presented. It is presented with a tremendous amount of gravitas. If you look in the end of this section, you will see in Pasuk 44 and 45 that Hashem goes and says, Ki ani Hashem Elokechem, because I am the Lord your God, therefore you shall be holy. And in Pasuk 45, Ki ani Hashem Hamala Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim Lios Lechem Le'elokim. I am God who took you up, elevated you from Mitzrayim to be your God. All of this is in association with not eating insects. So they are considered very important and linked directly to the greatest of our, you know, principles, which is Yetzias Mitzrayim, having God as our king, you know, the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael elevated for the purpose of not eating shrotzim. Okay? So first let's go through the actual psukim. Then we're going to go through the implications, and then we're going to get into a fundamental philosophical idea which will bring us straight back to the Eitz Hadas, as everything always does. Because we will have to go via the Chet HaEgel, which everything always comes back to also. And this is all very appropriate because we are now in those days between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kabbalah Satorah, which again, this will have a lot to do with. So let's start reading the Psukim. Pasuk 41. Bechol hasheretz, things that are shrutzim. A sheretz is a swarming thing. Hashoretz al haaretz, it swarms upon the earth. Sheketzu, it's a sheketz. Shikutz, it's detestable. It is something revolting. A shake. Unfortunately, when we refer to people as shkutzim, it comes from this. We should not refer to people as shkutzim. My grandfather was very, very careful. He referred to non-Jews as the umos ha'olam, the nations of the world, and nothing other than that. Goyim is also not a derogatory term. It just means nations. We are referred to as a goy. But shkutzim is pretty bad, okay? Comes from here. So sheket is a detestable thing. Lo ye achel shall not be eaten. By the way, if anybody is up on the latest kashrus controversies, the salmon thing, that's this Rashi. Now, it's a huge machlokas, whether this is just much ado about nothing or it's something legitimate. But just so you should know, this is based on this Rashi, because the Pasuk says, every swarming thing that swarms on the earth. So Rashi says here, if you look, lahotze, and to exclude the yitushim, the gnats, that are in figs and beans, I'm going to read it in the English, and the mites that are in lentils, for they do not swarm upon the earth, but within food. In other words, their eggs are in some plants, you see in some animals work this way, they actually insert or inject their eggs into something else, and that host becomes really the breeding ground for the eggs, and they hatch inside the host. So Rashi says here that these do not swarm upon the earth, but within food. But after they have gone out into the air and swarmed, then they become forbidden. So the whole machlokas, by the way, with the salmon, is there's an ancient old machlokas that was worked on, and they made, you know, this is old. They figured this out a long time ago, hundreds of years ago. There were little worms inside salmon that breed in the salmon. Now they're questioning, are these really worms from the outside that are coming into the salmon? The question is if there's a hole, a penetration in the skin or not. I'm not getting into all the halachas, but that's where this comes from. Are those, it is mutter to eat the tiny little insects that actually are bred in the food itself. Okay. In any case, so Rashi tells us, but other than that, anything that swarms on the earth is usur. Now, continue. Pasuk 42. Kol holech al gachon, anything that walks on its belly. Kol holech al arba, anything that works on all four, walks on fours. Ad kol mar beraglim, that which has many feet. L'chol hasheretz, hasheretz al haaretz lo sochlum, ki sheketz heim. If you look in the Rashi, very interesting here. He says, first of all, this is to render punishable the one who feeds as well as the one who eats. Okay, a sheretz is a swarming thing is referred to as a sheretz if it is something that is short-legged, which seems only to progress by creeping movements. Holech al gachon, walking on the belly, refers to a snake. Okay, and it goes bent and prostrated on its belly. Then he says the next one, kol holech, refers to snails and things similar to this. Holech al arba, walking on all fours, refers to a scorpion. Kol, the word kol includes beetles and other insects similar to these. Then mar beraglayim, something that has many feet, is a centipede, or it's an insect that has feet from its head until its tail. You shall not make any of these things al-tashaks. Oh, then he talks also about snails, and makes reference to snails, we said, and scorpions, and centipedes, etc. Pasuk 43. Yes, he says centipedes. That's right, yeah. Must be a French word. Yes. Al takshu, pasuk 43. Al tishaktsu esnaf shosechem. Do not make your nefesh detestable. V'chol hasheretz hashoretz, with every swarming thing that swarms. V'lo titamu behem. Do not become tummy. So it's tishaktsu, don't make yourself like detestable. Shekefs, don't make yourself tummy. V'nitmesem bam, you shall not be defiled by them. Pasuk 44, Ki ani Hashem Elokechem, because I am Hashem your God. V'skadashtem, you shall be kadosh. Ha'isem kadoshim. Ki kadosh ani, because I am kadosh. Lo titamu esnaf shosechem b'chol hasheret haromes al ha'aretz. You're driving in the point here again and again and again. There's a lot of repetition here. Do not become tameh. Do not become detestable. I am Hashem your God. Be kadosh. So kadusha and tahara is opposed to tuma and shikutz, which are kind of associated with shkutzim. That is like the official like poster for tuma and shikutz is shrutzim. Now pasuk 45 is the pasuk we are going to concentrate on. Ki ani Hashem hamale eschem mi'eretz Mitzrayim, because I am Hashem who brought you up from the land of Mitzrayim. Vayisem kadoshim be kadosh ki kadosh ani, because I am holy. Now, this is very important, because Rashi says here a principle, tells us a rule, and when we see this rule, you know something big is going on. Rashi says, ki ani Hashem hamale eschem, for I am the Lord that brought you up. The first part of Rashi we will not focus on. Rashi says, al menas shetekablu mitzvosai helesi eschem, in order that you accept my mitzvahs, is that is why I brought you up. But he brings a davar acher. He says, ki ani Hashem hamale eschem, because I am Hashem who has brought you up, bekulan ksiv hotzesi. Every other time it refers to Yetzias Mitzrayim, the word Hashem uses to define our removal from Mitzrayim is hotzesi. I have taken you out. Vekan ksiv hamale. And here it says, I have brought you up. Tanat be Rabbi Yishmol. So in reference to this, it was taught by the school of Rabbi Yishmol. The following, Il mole lo helisi es Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, ella bishvil she'ein mitamim bishratzim, kishar ha'umos dayam. If I had not brought them up, or if I had only brought them up for the reason that they will not defile themselves with shratzim, like the other nations do, that would be sufficient, for they have this elevation, that this is an elevation. This is something unique. So first of all, we have a couple of things here. Only in regard to not eating shrutzim does HaKadosh Baruch Hu use the term that I've elevated you, I've taken you up. Okay? Helisi. Hamale eschem. And it is so significant that we don't eat bugs and insects and all of these usher things that had Hashem taken us out and only invested in us this particular mila, that we are different than the Goyim and that we don't eat these things, that would have been enough to fulfill the purpose of removing us from Mitzrayim and distinguishing us from the Goyim. This alone, this is so significant, this is such a distinction from the other nations, that Yetzias Mitzrayim, if this alone would have been the result, it would have been enough. We would have been unique among the nations. So what we have to focus on here is, what is the link between Shratzim and Aliyah, taking you up from Mitzrayim? And what we must realize is Hashem never ever uses the term hamale except here. But the term is used, but not by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Who knows when the term of aliyah from Mitzrayim is used in the Chumash? Regarding Klal Yisrael coming out of Mitzrayim, and the term is aliyah as opposed to yetziyah. Eila Elohecha Yisrael. Asher he'alucha me'eretz Mitzrayim. What's that? That is what they said about the eagle. When they built the eagle, they said, Eile Elohecha Yisrael. This is your God, Yisrael, Asher He'elucha, that brought you up from Eretz Yisrael. The Erev Rav used this term, but Hashem never used this term except here. So what's the connection? What were the Erev Rav saying? What is the Kadosh Baruch Hu saying in regard to Shvatim? Just to run back and see that pasuk, it's in Shemos, turn to Perek Lamed Beis. I don't have the Shemos in front of me. Actually, maybe I have something here. Perek Lamed Beis. What pasuk? Who can find the pasuk? It's right in the beginning. Who's got the pasuk? Pasuk Dalet?
Yeah.
Pelinu? Pasuk Dalet. So, here's the question. What's the Erev Rav uses this term. What's the connection? So, first of all, let's start with my grandfather's presentation here in the Mayan. And I just want to tell you that a few years ago in 07, I don't know if it's recorded, we worked with the Rambam and Rav Sadia Gaon about the concept of, you know, the concept of should a person say, I wish I could eat this, but what can I do? I can't. Hashem said no. Versus should a person say, I would never want to eat this. Right? We work with that topic, and we're going to touch on it again for a moment. But here's how my grandfather starts. He brings down the Rashi that we just read about Rabbi Yishmael, that this would be enough of a distinction that Yetzias Mitzrayim would be purposeful, that Klal Yisrael were unique among the nations, that they didn't eat shkatzim, and they didn't eat insects. However, he goes on and he brings a pasuk in Kedoshim, which I want you all to flip forward, Perek Chaf, pasuk Chaf Vav, Perek 20, pasuk 26. Okay? So here's the pasuk. Pasuk 20, Perek 20, pasuk 26 in Kedoshim, it says, Vahayisem li Kedoshim, and you shall be holy to me. Ki kadosh ani Hashem, for I am holy. Va'avdil eschem min ha'amim, and I've separated you from the nations. Lios li, to be for me. So Rashi says here, im atem muvdolim mehem, if you're apart, distinct from the nations, hare atem shali, then you are mine. But im lav, if not, hare atem shal Nebuchadnezzar v'chaverav, then you're in the grip of Nebuchadnezzar and everybody else. If you're one of them, then you'll fall into the lot of all of them, and you'll be subject to all of their whims and their likes and dislikes. But if you're mine, then you will be living in a separate dimension. You're Shali. So he said, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Elazar says, Minayin Shalo Yomer Adam. From where do we learn that a person should not say, Nafshi katsa mibisar chazir. My soul is, disgusted from, or I loathe, pig meat. Or efshi lilbosh klaim. I can't possibly put on shatness. It's repulsive to me. How do we know the person shouldn't say that? Aval yomer, they should say, efshi. I do desire it. Uma esa, but what should I do? Avi shabashamayim gazar, like my father in heaven commanded me. Talmud Lomar, we learn it. Va'avdil eschem min ha'amim liosli. We learn it from this pasuk right here. Shetehei havdalaschem mehem lishmi. That you should be parush from these things only on account of me and not because you yourself have no interest in them. Now this is very broad because the examples that are brought down here, and Rambam discusses this and Rav Sadia Gaon, are things that are chukim. Things that we would not rationally come to on our own, not wearing shatness, not eating chazir. So, and that whole discussion that we had basically defines this machlokas, which the philosophers had, and Rambam brings down in the Shmona Prokin, and he says we do agree with them on certain levels, and it depends just how you categorize the things that you're allowed to say, I wish I could do, but I can't, versus the things you shouldn't even want to do, right? Because the machlokas is what's a higher madrega? I wish I could, but I can't, versus I would never want to. So it breaks down basically in those things that are known by people and which we'd come to on our own without a revelation from the Torah, such as don't kill and don't steal and don't be a horrible person and don't lie and don't get people in trouble and don't steal, and don't take other people's wives, fields, businesses, reputations, all those things that are self-evident to be either good or bad. A person should not desire to do them and say, oh, I have to hold myself back. If someone is on that level, it shows they're not fully developed spiritually. It's a much higher level to say, I don't want to kill and I don't want to steal. And I don't want to hurt people and I don't want to bring pain and suffering to people. I don't want to bring injustice into the world and falsity into the world and confusion. That's a much higher madrigal. A person should definitely aspire to that and should feel that they need to get to that point where they don't want to do these things. However, regarding chukim, regarding things that are revealed that you'd never come to on your own, how could a person say, I would never want to eat pig, or I'd never want to wear shatness? You know, where does that come from? So, of course I would do these things. It's not something that I perceive as being bad or harmful or detrimental to another human being or destroy another person's happiness. So why wouldn't I want to? Of course I want to, but Hashem said I can't and I won't, only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said I won't. Lishmi, from L'shem Shamayim, and that's how the Jews show we are distinguished just for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself and not for any other reason. However, that is all very good about chukim versus mishpatim, or revealed versus self, you know, laws that are not knowable, or logical and rational versus, you know, things that have no explanation. However, this concept of shkatim is in a separate category by itself. This category is in a this is separate because my grandfather brings then down the brings this pasuk in Kedoshim that a person shouldn't say I would never eat chazer and I'd never eat kalayim. There's a Gemara in Horius, Maseches Horius, that says Shemi she'ochel shkatzim, somebody who eats insects and creepy crawly things as we've just described, harehu bichlal, he is considered mumer lahachis. A mumer is somebody that denies the Torah, that purposefully goes ahead and violates the Torah as a sign of disobedience, and mumer lahachis is doing it spitefully to show that they're not under the domination, they're not under Hashem's will, they're not subordinate to Hashem's will, because there's no way that a person will ever want to do this, and it's not something where they're giving in to the Yetzer Hara. If they do this, it's mumer lahachis, they are desecrating, violating the will of Hashem purposefully out of spite. It's just a conscious decision to show, I refuse to listen to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we're talking about someone, obviously, who's not conditioned to, you know, unfortunately, to eat these things because they have no knowledge and this is what they were given and this is what they eat and they've developed a taste for it. A Jew who knows, who's aware that they're Jewish and who has a sense or some type of sense that hasn't been unfortunately ripped out of them or completely, submerged in an increase in familiarity with it. It's a Jew that eats insects and creepy crawly things is considered to be going against their nature. So, how is that? So he brings down here, based on the pasuk that we read, Aki ani Hashem hamala eschem me'eretz Mitzrayim liyos lechem l'Elohim, I am God who brought you up to be for you a God and be kadosh, that one of the gifts, or the only absolutely clear, indicative, visible expression of the fact that when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, he didn't just give us rules that will distinguish us and make us better and more moral and more ethical than the non-Jews, but he changed the nature of the neshama of a Jew so that automatically certain things that are kadosh are natural and things that are tameh are repulsive to us. The way that this is experienced is through eating of insects and creepy crawly things, ushkatzim uramasim. My grandfather says here, and I'll read his lashon, shebavadai, he quotes this Gemara in Horius, ein ochel l'teyavon, this person does not eat insects for his, that's what he loves and it's his appetite. Sharei nafsho shel adam katsa behem, because the natural response of a person is to be disgusted by them. This is what makes shratzim different than every other iser. Shabashar isurim, that regarding other things, a person doesn't say that they're disgusted by it, such as pig meat. We're not disgusted by it. Ella, I could see the attraction of it, but I can't do it. Masha einkin b'shratzim, this is not the case with insects. A person is revolted by them. V'chiluk zeh mekoro, and where is this distinction come from? It's makar. Its source is mi'iloi, an elevation, which is mi'yuchad, unique and special, sheyesh b'nafsho shel Yisrael. That is in the nefesh of a Jew. They have that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the teva, the nature of the nefesh of a Jewish person, so that in one area, what Hashem's will is so automatically, so naturally our will that it's not even a challenge. Hashem says, Shkatzim are tame. We have no interest in eating shkatzim. We consider them tame and repulsive and not appealing to us at all, and there's no big yetzer hara involved with them. Of course, you can develop an appetite for anything. So Nebuch, Jews who are fed this all the time and encouraged to eat this, perhaps do develop some type of an appetite. But someone who has not been, unfortunately, their nefesh has not been, impurified with these things, will have a natural revulsion to them. And in that way, they experience in this area in their life that what Hashem says is tameh, we feel is tameh. We have no interest in it. We would vomit it if we were forced to ingest it. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referring to this experience, which is doesn't come from outside. It's not a law that we're forced to keep. It's not a rule that we have to aspire to, like getting to becoming at peace with. It's so basic to us. It's so inherent in us that we feel, halavai the whole Torah could be like this, that what Hashem says is tameh, we feel about that it's tameh. And if Hashem says it's good and it's tahar, we have a great appetite for it and a great desire for it because it's good and it's tahar. This is the one area that we experience the aliyah. This is more than a yetziyah, it's an aliyah. So what we're saying here is that aliyah seems to be a madrega that's even beyond yetziyah. But it's not a madrega that in any other area we can assume or take for granted that just because we came out of Mitzrayim, we're automatically in a place where we only want what Hashem wants and we only don't want what Hashem doesn't want, and our gut is in line with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, what is right and what is true. Now, we've spoken about this, right? We've spoken about, so often, the mind, which tells us what's emes, and the heart, the ani, the intrinsic desire, which has its own sense of what we've spoken about, good and bad, or interest. And we always talk about getting the two of them in harmony. That's Zohar Nekev as one, and all of those ideas, right? That's the Ruchnius and the Gashmius as one. Here's an area where they're automatically in harmony. Okay. Now, the problem is here that in every other area it says, Asher Hotzei Sicha, I've taken you out, versus this. What is the difference between Yetziyah? Let's analyze it. And Aliyah. What is the difference between Yetziyah and Aliyah? To go up from something versus to go out of something. So taking out is an extraction, correct? We have a halacha that is associated with the concept of Yetziyah. It's called Hotza'a. It's the only one of the Hilcha Shabbos, really, that is one of the 39 malachas, but doesn't really have any connection to the other 38 malachas. There are other Hilcha Shabbos that are not in the 39 malachas, but there are 39, and the 39th is Hotza'a, and it's not really part of the first 38. The first 38, if you broke them down into categories, as you well know, are divided into three basic categories. What are they? Good. Food, clothing, and shelter. The pursuit of your basic physical needs, your survival needs. And then there's Hotza'a, carrying.
That's not shelter?
Hmm?
That's not shelter?
Hotza'a is totally separate. So what is Hotza'a? Hotza'a is the halachic definition of Hotza'a is carrying from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, or vice versa, correct? Carrying from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus, two different Rishuyot, two different domains. All of the 38 malachas in Torah, my grandfather brings this down in Vayakhel, based on Rav Hirsch. They relate to, as we said, food, clothing, and shelter. And the reason we do them is because they were done in the Mishkan. And the point of the Mishkan is, in a sense, the perfection of Briyas HaOlam, correct? Vayiva Yom HaShmini, which we didn't focus on, the eighth day, 7 days of creation, so to speak. And the eighth day was HaKamas HaMishkan. The Mishkan was like a microcosm imperfection of all the kohos in the world displayed and properly oriented, properly set up, We talked about this with Sarah's tent in the past, the mitzvahs and Sarah, the mitzvahs and nisim of Sarah's tent, the mitzvahs and nisim in the Beis HaMikdash and through the kelim. A little microcosm of the perfection of the world displayed through the kelim and the avoda in the kelim. We know that one of the main reasons for Shmir Shabbos is Kisheshes Yamim Asas Hashem as Hashemayim Vars. Shabbos, we keep Shabbos as a testimony that Hashem created heaven and earth, which is very much translated into the avod of the Mishkan, and the Malachas of Shabbos relate to that, to the Briyas HaOlam, therefore things that were related to the Mishkan we don't do on Shabbos. It all relates to testimony to Briyas HaOlam. However, there's also another reason why we keep Shabbos. What's that? Because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. There's one of the 39 Malachas, Hotza'ah, carrying, that is because of Yetzias Mitzrayim and not because of Briyas HaOlam. In the end, Rav Hirsch says, Hotza'ah reminds us that what happened in Mitzrayim, or rather in Yetzias Mitzrayim, is we were taken from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. Klal Yisrael went from being part of all the nations to being in their own space completely, unique, totally unique, living a different life with different goals, different aspirations, responding to different rules, holding ourselves separate. Is the classical philosophical expression through not carrying from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid of the fact that a nation, that we as a nation, moved from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYachid. We exist in our own little bubble. There's no question about it. And when we forget that and we don't want to, they make sure that we go back into our own bubble. They distinguish us from themselves. That's Hotza'ah. Yetziyah is that we were extracted from Mitzrayim to live separately. How do you live separately? You live by different rules. We set up our societies under different, because, you know, based on different fundamental principles. Our societies are not dictatorships, and our societies are not survival of the fittest societies. It's where the strong takes care of the weak, and where the healthy takes care of the sick, and where there's tzedek and mishpat. We have a whole way of setting up our communities and their national life and rules that apply to kings that were so progressive. Rambam brings down in Hilchos Malachim that our kings, 3,000, you know, close to 3,000 years ago, we had kings that were under the rule of law, like every citizen. Kings that could get malchus. You know, kings that you could act, the kings that had to listen to a navi and had to be chastised and had to take rebuke. And it was kings that were not allowed to amass any fortune for themselves. Everything had to be only, they could only take from war what they could needed for their government or for their expenditures. Very, very progressive. We were a unique nation. We were taken out of all the other nations, the family of man, to live separately and differently as an Or LaGoyim, a role model. However, in all areas, this is a constant struggle for Klal Yisrael to be different, to live by different rules. That's Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that is what we've struggled with, and you see that sometimes we're slipping back. Even when they were in the Midbar, they want to go back. It's very hard to be separate, to be, when there's a magnetic pull, to be part of mankind and to hold oneself separate. There is a huge struggle. But in one area, which is the area of Shvatzim, we don't talk about Hotza'ah, we talk about Aliyah, that we experience through this, which we can really relate to on a regular basis, that there's another level that exists for Klal Yisrael, which is that we are unique, our neshamas are different, we don't even want what HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want, we only want what Hashem, we intuitively, our gut is to be connected to, be close to what Hashem says is tahar and good, and to be repulsed by what Hashem says is tameh. And in that area, Hashem refers to an aliyah. Now, the objective is that we are ola, that we're always going up. We have an aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, even though Eretz Yisrael is not the highest of lands. The objective is that we do achieve an aliyah. The problem is, who's going to make that aliyah happen? Hashem did the yitziyah. He took us from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYachid. The aliyah takes place not automatically, because Hashem says abracadabra, like he did with Shkatzim, with these insects, but in every other area through very hard work, till a person gets to a point where they no longer want what Hashem says is tameh or sheker or bad. Why did, and we're going to talk about dam soon, but why did Erev Rav use the term he'alucha? Ela Elohecha Yisrael asher he'alucha me'eretz Mitzrayim. What was at the core of that choice? So think about it. Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim. How many days did it take till Kabbalah Satorah? 49. We're in the middle of them, right? So in 49 days, realistically, can a person go from serving, pretty much serving idols, which they were doing in Mitzrayim, isn't it? Serving idols, which they're doing in Mitzrayim. In other words, not clearly, without a grasp of the pure concept of monotheism and all its various ramifications, to a Gilui Shechina of such proportions that Moshe Rabbeinu himself and Klal Yisrael had the same degree of Gilui Shechina, at least during the first two Dibros. How realistic is that? Obviously, Klal Yisrael were elevated to a point where their neshamas experienced something that was way beyond their reality. What's the proof of this? The Chet HaEgel. That they were not there because they personally achieved that madriga. They were there because it was a gift that was kind of thrown upon them, that they were sucked up into a new world that during the experience, the clarity was overwhelming, but it wasn't who Klal Yisrael were. So they fell to the Egel. What happened when they built the Egel? They built an Egel, and they said, Eila Elohecha Yisrael Asher Halucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. And now we get a little philosophical. We have to stretch a little bit. The Egel is always associated with Echet Eitz Hadas, right? It's always like, just like the two, Adam and Chava sinned in Eitz Hadas as individuals, when Klal Yisrael started as a nation, the big challenge was the Echet Egel, was a similar type of challenge. What's the parallel between them? What did the Nachash say to Chava to entice her? You'll be like God. Vayisa lelokim. That's right. Vayisa lelokim. You will be like God. What she means to say is like this. There is a tremendous urge in a person to get to a level where what they know to be true and what they intuitively feel and what their gut reaction is so perfect and so right that they don't need anyone else's opinion and they can run their life or the whole world if they have power, according to what they know to be true. In other words, that's really to be like God, to determine, to be the absolute final decision maker for people, for either in small areas or in very large areas. For a person to feel that what I intuitively gut, know is MS and I don't need anyone else's opinion. There is no question that Klal Yisrael, as a nation, and each and every individual in Klal Yisrael, are expected to get to a madriga in all the various areas in our life where we are so connected to what Hashem tells us is true that that's exactly how we operate. It's our gut knowledge. It's what we desire. It's what we automatic. It's our knee-jerk reaction. But that doesn't happen automatically because that would be, then there'd be no point to the whole existence and all of the challenges. And Bechira Chafshesh, Hashem doesn't create us on a madrega where we're like God himself. But is that the objective, that in areas slowly but surely we get to a point where, as Pirkei Avos says, Ase Ritzono Ritzonecha, make your will his will, so he will make his will your will. It should get to a point where our will is the will of Hashem. It's completely harmonious. What was the Nachash and what was the Egel? There's a tremendous, and we've spoken about the Nachash from many aspects, and this is part of what we've spoken about. There's a tremendous urge in a person not to go through the process. Remember we spoke about the process before Pesach? Not to go through the process of the hard work, of the challenge with what I want to do versus what Hashem wants me to do, with what my mind says is MS and my gut, and subduing my desire, and doing what Hashem wants, and slowly bringing oneself into a place where what Hashem wants is what they want. That's the avoda of living. That's the whole Bria is for that. That's why we're here. That is the whole purpose of the creation. We cannot jump over the process and get to the end where you see things from God's perspective and therefore you're always right and you can do what you want and you don't need anyone's opinion and you don't need anybody's help and you're convinced that your way is the only way because it must be because you're as smart and as clear and as pure as God himself. But every human being, who wants other people's opinions? There are certain things we feel so deeply and we know to be true, whether they are right or wrong, that we don't want anybody interfering and telling us a different opinion or a second, or a different perspective on it. That's what human beings want. Human beings want to trust themselves and go with their gut. That's a tremendous Yetzirah, and that's what the Yetzirah that was kind of induced there by the Eitz Hadas. If you eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov or Ra, subjective, right? Subjective truth. What you subjectively know will be always perfect and always right. It'll be the same category as Emes and Sheker. what's false and what's true. Just like we know what's true, 2 plus 2 is 4. So what you subjectively feel, because Tov and Ra is subjective, will be exactly as pure and as perfect as what is absolutely fact. And every human being wants that. We almost feel that. And we know we're fools to feel that, but we really do feel that. When we see something a certain way, we're sure that that is the only way to see it. And to us, it's MS and Checker. It's not subjective opinions. Despite the fact that if you just run it by a few other people, they won't agree. But that's how it has to be. That was the Eitz Hadas was basically saying to humanity, there is a process, right? And there is an end. Jump to the end without the process. Now, when Klal Yisrael, right? Now, we were told, what was the curse? Remember, let's just review this. It wasn't really a curse. It was guidelines. Hashem told the Isha, the subjective agenda in a person, don't trust yourself. You are in the grip of the Nachash. You will rationalize everything. You will use your mind as a little puppet to tell you why everything you want to do is right and is true. So you are going to destroy everything around you because you do not have pure subject. Your subjective opinion isn't pure. It is not God's opinion. It's your own opinion. And it's very more like the Nachash than like Hashem's opinion. So what should you do? Remember what were the instructions? El Ishech Tshukasech, to your intellect should be your desire. V'hu Yim Sholbach, and the intellect must dominate the gut. But what's the end result of Achras Hayamim? We talked about this. The Isha, the intuitive knowledge, the Ratzon, that ultimately will dominate even the intellect because it will be pure and it will be correct and it will be trusted. The Tanya and the Rambam speaks about the great tzaddikim, the few great righteous men and women that live in this world that have perfected themselves are in many areas on that Madrega where they can trust every gut reaction because it's so purified. But those are the few unique, gifted people that are sent down to lead us and guide us. It's not the average, regular person. The regular person has to go through the process to get to that end. But that end is the end. And Hashem, we say in the end of days, will slaughter the Yetzirah, and we will feel what is Emes, and what we say is Tov will be Emes. Till today, we can say something is Tov, but it's pure Sheker. We could say it's Ra, but it's pure Emes. Our subjectivity and objectivity are not in order. So, what happened to Erevav? Klal Yisrael were raised up for a moment to the Madrega of seeing everything from Hashem's perspective, total clarity, which, by the way, means lack of choice. There is no choice when everything's so obvious. At that moment, that's called the mountain over their head, right? That's what the Madrega they were raised up to on Har Sinai. And then they're waiting for Moshe to come down, and Moshe's not coming down. And what that means, and they didn't understand that. And they didn't have clear vision on that. And the Erevav were the first to begin to crumble. And they didn't have Moshe. They didn't have the leader that they looked up to remind them of this Madrega. Moshe was the epitome, the embodiment of the Madrega of Sinai. And they wanted to retain the Madrega of Sinai, which is through, and here is the almost humorous, open contradiction that we all live with and we all display, some more than others, I'm sure not too much here, but that a person can be involved in something that is absolutely sheker, completely wrong, and convince themselves that it is right because they gut feel that it's right, because that's where they're coming from that it's right, and affirm and fight for the fact that this is right. So while they're making an egel, they're saying, Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher Halucha, that we're on a madrega called Aliyah, where we know that this is the proper way to serve Hashem. They didn't think that they were angering Hashem a few days after, 40 days after Matan Torah. They thought this was the way to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, singing and dancing and bringing karbanos. They were completely convinced because in that state of Aliyah, it's the state of what you feel is what must be Emes. So, but we don't trust that. Once Hashem went up from Har Sinai, there was a moment of Har Sinai, like there was the moment before the sin, however long that moment was, where there was an experience by human beings of being in a state of total perfection, total clarity, total trustworthiness. But the reality then is to go back into the process and go according to the rules that Hashem sets up and not break the rules, no matter how much we feel that we know that we're doing what's right. So that's what's the funny, unfortunately, that's human beings do this all the time. We're so sure that what we feel is right, that we can be engaged in what is totally wrong and defend it as if it's completely right. So who were the examples of people in more modern eras who did this? So for example, some of the false Mashiachs, one of their patterns, one of their techniques would be to say that they so were in tune with the will of Hashem and the Kabbalistic secret, you know, perfect worlds of Hashem, that they didn't need to listen to the mitzvahs, because the mitzvahs were for everybody, to keep everybody in line, doing what Hashem wants. But since they know intuitively what Hashem wants, they're beyond the responsibilities of the mitzvah. So, for example, Shabbos HaTzvi was classical. It's called antinomian, when you go against the law. Shabbos HaTzvi would do all kinds of terrible Yisurim in public and say Hashem's name, Yudke Vavke, and did terrible things with women. And he was so sure that he didn't need to listen. By the way, he convinced a lot of people, too. People were very caught up in his charismatic style and his brilliance and his fervor. It was a whole upheaval. But he would do things that came from what he defended as an intuitive connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that superseded everything else. How does Parsha Shemini start? Same idea. The unfortunate death of Nadav and Avihu. Where did that come from? It came from an unbridled ahava, love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, desire to participate in the avoda of the dedication of the Mishkan that was not commanded by Hashem. Because if they knew intuitively their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so strong, like a magnetic force, it was so right to them and so real and so obvious that they wanted to bring a korban or eish, there's a lot of machlokus what happened there, that was not commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because did they think they were angry on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Did they think they were doing something to violate the will of Hashem on the day of the consecration of the Mishkan? If they knew it openly, there would be a violation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. They wouldn't have done it. It was came from the danger. And this halavai, we should be even 1,000 miles away from this madriga. If we should be even in that sphere of their madriga, that a person's connection to Hashem is so close, so overwhelming, so burning with desire to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that it's hard to hold back and temper them oneself and say, but even though I want to, I feel it, it's my natural yearning, and all I want is to be close to Hashem, even that I have to stop myself. By the way, my grandfather brings down, in the morning we say, here, in the beginning, in the morning we say, here, I just need a sitter. One second. If you just look at this nusach, you'll see there's a line here that's a little out of place. We say, after the 15 brachas, right, we say like this. We're talking about the Yitzhara and we're talking about the Yitzhar Tov. So tell me which comes first. Targileinu besar secha, make us regular in your Torah. Dabkeinu, make us cling to your mitzvahs. Do not bring us to sin, not to aveira, not to avon, different categories, not to a challenge, not to an embarrassment. Va'al tashlet banu yetzer hara, and don't let the yetzer hara rule us and keep us far away from adam ra, chaver ra, right, a bad friend, a bad neighbor. So we're talking about yetzer hara, sin. Now we go into the next section. V'dabkeinu b'yetzer hatov. Let us cling to the Yetzer Tov, Maisim Tovim, good deeds. V'kof es Yetzreinu l'shtabed lach, and help us subdue our Yetzer to just be in your service. Why is this here in the middle of the Yetzer HaTov section? Because we're talking about the Yetzer HaTov. We're talking about the Yetzer HaTov. When we say v'kof es Yetzreinu and help us kind of control our desire to be in your service, we're talking about the Yetzer HaTov. Sometimes a person's Yetzer HaTov is so strong that can be their undoing. That they go beyond the call of duty or beyond their halachic limits out of Ava. Halavai, that should be everyone's madriga. I just want to end with one other idea that my grandfather brings down, which is really, to me, very striking. He says that regarding blood. You know, in England they eat black pudding. That's blood, congealed blood. Many cultures eat blood, okay, in various forms. So regarding blood, he brings this down. He says, regarding blood, in Parshas Re'eh, the Pasuk says, Rak Chazak, but be strong, Lebilti echol hadam. Don't eat dam. Now you would think that if the Torah says be strong, that would mean that it's hard for us not to eat blood. That we have a great yetzahara for blood, and Hashem says, Rak chazak, be strong, and don't eat blood. However, so the Gemara sees it the other way. The Gemara sees it completely differently. The Sifri says, Lo ba hakasav. This Torah, this kasav comes for one reason, lhazircha, to warn you, ulalamedcha, to teach you, ad kama atatzorech lischazik b'mitzvos. How much you have to strengthen yourself to keep all the mitzvos properly. Now, im hadam shehukal, if regarding blood, which it's really easy me lehishamer mimenu, to watch yourself from it, she'ein ademisav lo, that a person does not have a yetzahara for it, has no taiva for it, hutzrach lechazkecha, to make you strong, lechazekcha, to make you strong, ba'azharos, with many warnings, kal v'chomer l'shar mitzvah. So here's how the Sifri takes it. This is a kal v'chomer. If the Torah says be strong and don't eat blood, this doesn't mean you want to eat blood, so you have to really be strong not to. This means you should really be strong not to transgress any mitzvahs and take a kal v'chomer for blood. Blood, which is easy, the Torah says be strong. Kal v'chomer, things that are not easy, you should be strong. So now the question about blood being not very easy for us to stay away from. That, believe it or not, is not so easy to prove, because we have indications that we were not at all, like with Shratzim, we did not at all have a nature to be repulsed by blood. In fact, it brings down Rashi from the Sifri that Hayushtufim Bedam Kodem Matan Torah. They ate a lot of blood, and they were very attracted to blood Kodem Matan Torah. Okay, this was very much the nature of Klal Yisrael. So my grandfather brings down here that blood is really, compared to what we spoke about the Shratzim, shows us the avoda of Klal Yisrael. So we get that blood is an indication of a food that Hashem did not automatically and magically make repulsive to us, but rather, my grandfather says, because the Torah warned us against blood numerous times in the Torah, in various parshas, like in Parshas Achrimos and in Parshas Re'eh, over and over again, Klal Yisrael took it seriously. They stayed meticulously away from blood until it became abhorrent to us, but not naturally, not because we would never eat blood, but rather because we as Jews have so distanced ourselves from blood and eating blood and all our kashering laws, and that we are now a people that, like we don't eat shratzim, we don't eat blood. Okay? This is really what we were speaking about before, the avoda of a person. The avoda of a person is to take what you naturally are attracted to, that's not permitted, and through all the azharas, through all the warnings and the mitzvahs associated with it, and the way we take them seriously, to get to a point where they become to us, like, out of the pale. Not something we're interested in. That's what happened with blood. Says here that regarding blood, the fact is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees Klal Yisrael. B'zeh zachu b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael merited lahaskula. They merited that privilege that regarding blood, we made our ratzon into Hashem's ratzon. So Hashem promises us He'll make His ratzon into our ratzon. In this area, we fulfilled this. It's also indicative for Klal Yisrael. Not that we had an aliyah that was supernatural, but we actually turned our ratzon into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon, which is the highest madrega. And therefore, but it says, rak chazak, but be strong, not to tell us that you no longer have to worry about blood because you've conquered that yetzahara, but the Torah phrases it with rak chazak as if we haven't, to remind us that just like with blood, that we no longer want because we've so trained ourselves. Hashem says, be careful, be strong. So all other mitzvahs can follow the same pattern. If we're careful with them, then where Hashem tells us be strong becomes like the blood, which is an easy thing. Everything else follows that pattern. They also can become easy if we're very, very careful and meticulous about them all the time. It's very funny, by the way, that the blood libels on Pesach, about blood in the matzahs. The Jews have so abhorred blood in every form that it's pure, pure sheker. So in any case, what we're speaking about here, really, to put it all together, is that these ideas of shratzim and dam bring us back to the fundamental principle that, of course, we are supposed to get to a place where we are so harmoniously in tune with the Torah and the mitzvahs that it's no longer a big struggle. However, we never can fool ourselves that we're automatically there and therefore trust ourselves and not that we no longer need the warnings and the guidelines of Torah. And that is very strong, you know, a pitfall that we so often fall into in every area. That's why we're always told that a person, for example, in learning, we learn with somebody else, a second opinion, right? Ezer kenegdo, a person cannot be alone, exclusive, relating only to themselves. In all areas in life, we, you know, to trust oneself and how we see things generally leads to a lot of damage. But to get to a point where a person can trust themselves and ben adam lemakom things and even ben adam lechaver things is the process, is the avoda of everything. So that's our life's work. We, you know, we wish everyone a good luck with that. Well, let me make an announcement. Yes, first of all, whoever sent in money for that, there was a letter sent around with my name for the Kosiner Biker Cholim. And a number of people sent in checks to them, which is very nice. They have apartments that people use near some of the major hospitals for free. Thank you very much for those checks. Other than that, we're back on track here. Make sure your email addresses are with the office so you can always know if we're on or off. Okay? And have a good week.